Hi, everybody. I'm Helen Robinson, and I am an alcoholic.
Hi, Helen.
And I live in Howardsville in Buckingham County, right on the James River. It's close to Scottsville. My home group is the Buckingham Group. They meet on Tuesday night at 7:30. We just moved to Centenary Methodist Church on Route 20, Constitution Highway, in Buckingham, which is also Scottsville, I guess. I have a sobriety date. It is September 26, 1997. So yesterday I celebrated an AA birthday. Thank you. I have a sponsor who I talked to on Thursday. And I sponsor other women. So that's all. Did I check all the boxes off? This isn't really one of my favorite forms of 12-step work, but I do thank you, Billy, for calling and asking me. I've been here before, and I've known Lynn and Billy a long, long time. So I grew up in upstate New York, the oldest of four kids, in a home where drinking was okay and normal. My parents had a lot of parties. They entertained a lot. They were involved in barbershop quartet singing, so we had afterglows at the house, and they were involved in little theater, so there was parties after the shows. And I remember people underneath the dining room table. I remember people locked in the bathroom. I remember a lot of, what is that word, conviviality? Ruckus, joyous, ha ha ha, good time. It looked like fun. Partying looked like fun. We would very often have wine with half ginger ale at my grandparents' house Sunday dinner. So it was really normal. Alcohol was very normal in my home. I didn't like the way beer tasted. It was too bitter, but some of the other stuff, you know, you'd go around and sip what was left in the morning after the party. Some of that stuff was god-awful, but some of it tasted pretty good. I never drank for taste. I always drank for effect. Seems like my first deliberate go-out-get-drunk thing was some guy had stolen some beer from home, and we left it outside, and it was frozen, so the alcohol would raise. This was all very deliberate. The alcohol would go to the top, and you drink it with a straw, so you get it faster. And I remember another incident where all my girlfriends had gotten together, and we all brought something from home and mixed it all together. And I remember that warm, taking that sip and that warm going down, all the way down to my toes. Being the oldest of four, I babysat a lot, and I remember being paranoid as a kid, thinking people were looking in the windows and stuff. I was a very fearful kid. I also, you know, my brother was a smart one. My middle sister was the pretty one, and the baby was the baby, so I was always like odd man out and always kind of one bubble off a plum. There was always something wrong with me, and I didn't know what it was. I thought I was crazy. I really thought I was crazy. I had suicidal ideations from 12 on. You know, I don't know what any of that was all about, other than just being really selfish and self-centered. And just so totally absorbed about how I felt, because it really was just all about me and how I felt and what was going on. And if I could just, you know, if everybody around me would just do what I wanted them to do, everything would be great. Or if I could just do things for others and make them happy, that I would be okay. I still do that. Still guilty of that. I remember adults in my life telling me that I needed to have goals, and I was college material, and I never knew what I wanted to do when I grew up. And I thought going to college would be a waste of time. I got nagged a lot about going to school. My parents were both school teachers, so there was a lot of pressure to be a good student. I did manage to graduate high school with honors, just barely. And my senior year in high school, I used to sign in the office in the afternoon. I didn't have to go to homeroom or morning classes because I was leaving campus and drinking a couple of beers and smoking some non-habit-forming other outside issue stuff. And the principal arranged my schedule so that I just signed in. And I remember being in gym class one afternoon and the gym teacher coming over and asking me if I had a drinking problem. And I was like, oh, no, it's no problem. Well, here I am, 17 years old and in school, and I had only had a couple, but still, 17 years old in the middle of the day and at school. He didn't turn me in. And fortunately or unfortunately, I suppose, that followed me through my drinking career because I didn't have the consequences that other people talk about having. I never had a DUI. I didn't lose a job. I didn't lose my family. All the yet that you hear people talk about, none of that stuff happened to me. But when I finally landed in Alcoholics Anonymous, I had no self-respect, and I really had no will to live. I was praying to God not to wake up in the morning. I went through various periods in my drinking. Like I said, I hated the taste and smell of beer. So I went through my gin period, and I had to have Tanqueray. Why? I don't know. Because it tasted better, I guess. And by the time I was wasted, I'd just say, I want Tanqueray and whatever. And I don't know, they were probably using the bottom shelf gin by then, if someone else was buying. My gin period, I went through a wine period where I drank only wine. I went through a Southern Comfort period. One of the methods of controlling my drinking when I was doing my bar drinking was that I would order Southern Comfort on the rocks and I would eat all the ice in the glass before I ordered another drink to slow down my drinking. Plus, that stuff was expensive. Another way I controlled my drinking, if I felt like I was getting too drunk, I would stick my finger down my throat and make myself sick and get rid of some of the alcohol. Not usually to continue drinking, but just so that I wouldn't go into alcoholic poisoning and coma and death. One of the neighborhood girls had ended up in the hospital with alcohol poisoning, and I didn't want that to happen. But if I was honest about it, there were probably a few occasions where after getting rid of some, I had room for more. Usually I just ended up passed out someplace. I had blackouts early on. I did not know that that was a sign of alcoholism. I just thought that was a sign of drinking too much. Didn't really realize that the lost time had anything to do with alcoholism. There was a pamphlet, and I don't know if it was an AA pamphlet for sure or not, but there was like 13 questions, and if you answered yes to two or more, you might be an alcoholic. I saw that pamphlet when I was 13 years old and could answer yes to a couple of the questions, so maybe filed way back in my brain somewhere. I also remember in junior high school in the textbook, in health class, when they're teaching us about drugs and alcohol and the evils of those, that if you got into trouble with alcohol, that you went to Alcoholics Anonymous. I hope that's still in textbooks today. I don't know. So trying to control my drinking by what I was ingesting, and people would nag me about, you know, you need to know your limits, or you need to slow down, or you got to keep your stuff together. Stuff together. I'll try to behave. Had a geographic. I went with an old boyfriend down to Houston, Texas, trying to start over. And had some weird things happen down there. Got robbed at gunpoint. My stepdad worked for Ingersoll Rand at the time, and he was down in Texas visiting or doing something for work. And he gave me some Valium, and that just knocked me out. But I had been drinking beer as well to calm me down after the robbery. I didn't last long down there. I moved back to New York, started into community college, still not knowing what I wanted to do. And it was there that I met him, who would become my ex-husband and father of my daughter. He had a Harley Davidson and a German Shepherd and an 11-year-old boy, and he wanted to live on a mountaintop and grow his own food and grow his own marijuana. And I thought, I'm in love. I found this. Because when I was 7 years old in second grade, I wanted to be a hippie when I grew up. That was my big aspiration. Anyway, we loaded up a broken-down pickup truck, and the kid and the bike and the dog packed up and headed for Virginia, thinking that we were going to find a place to caretake and live off the land. And we landed on my brother's doorstep in Norfolk, Virginia. He was in the Navy. It took 3 days to make a 12-hour trip because of the vehicle, the breakdowns. We kept breaking down. It was a crazy trip. Had a tent, cooked on the fire, living off the land, I guess. Norfolk. Still drinking. By that time, I was drinking beer, and although I hated the taste of beer, after two or three, it didn't matter. I very often drank to oblivion, time out of mind, and the blackouts continued, and the nagging from him continued. You drink too much, too fast. You need to slow down. I got pregnant. We got married in that order. He asked me first, but did it backwards. And we bought 10 acres of land with our income tax return in Lunenburg County, south, way south in Virginia. 10 acres of woods, and we started building this log cabin and packed up and moved to Lunenburg, to Victoria. And the little cabin in the woods, 1983 maybe, living with no plumbing, one four-way box. We were dragging water over from the neighbors across the road in milk jugs. Had an outhouse, and nobody lives like that. And not in 80s, not in 1983 anyway. We had a bathtub. I don't know why, but why not? We had a bathtub out in the yard. Once we finally got the well dug, we had a hose coming to the house. And there was a clawfoot iron tub outside, out back of the house, up on blocks, and fill the tub up with the hose, then build a fire underneath, and whoever's dirtiest got in last. And that's how we bathed for a while. Anyway, still the drinking continued. You know, I found my comrades. I found some gals that drank like I drank, and still the blackouts. And we sold the cabin in the woods and bought 20 acres, moving up, in Cumberland County outside of Farmville, and started building another house. And still hanging out with folks that partied like we did. He drank as well, but probably not the same as I did. You know what you did? You know what you said? No. Nagging. I remember my daughter saying, "Mommy, I was so scared you were going to die." And it truly is only by the grace of God that my daughter is healthy and normal today. I didn't party when I carried her, but not because of any decision that I made. It was only because it made me so sick that I just didn't do it. It was God doing for me and watching out for both of us. So, Memorial Day weekend, 1989, and one more time, getting blotto drunk, oblivion, blackout drunk, and another, do you know what you did, do you know what you said? Well, I forgot we had a bathroom, because I'm so used to going outside to go. I had gone outside to go, and by that time we did have indoor plumbing. And I just, something had to happen. I had called Alcoholics Anonymous back in 1986 when we were living in the woods, because I had read Betty Ford's biography, and I guess there was a TV movie as well, but I knew that was what was wrong with me. I had always known there was something wrong with me, but that was the first time I identified that I was probably an alcoholic. And I called AA at the time. I left a message. 2 days later, I got a phone call back, and they said, "We're sorry, there's nobody in your area." This is where I'm going to get on the soapbox for public information work. There was a meeting in Cambridge. I didn't know that at the time. I had seen I decided I would go see this alcoholism counselor through the community service board. And I told her what was going on in the home and so on and so forth. And I quit drinking on my own, well, I guess with her help, probably for a few days, maybe a couple of weeks. I was having stomach problems at the time. I went to my doctor. He did an upper GI. He told me I had gastritis, probably as a result of the drinking. But I remember telling him I thought I was an alcoholic. And he never suggested treatment, AA, nothing. So if you have a doctor, tell them who we are and what we do. Sponsor your doctor. I'll get off the soapbox eventually. Anyway, fast forward back to Farmville and Memorial Day weekend, 89. And I was finally... I needed to do something. So this time there was a local number for AA in the phone book, and I called, and the phone rang. Then I talked to this gentleman, and he said, "Come on down here to the bookstore." There was a bookstore in downtown Farmville, and I went down there, and this couple 12-stepped me, and they gave me a big book. And the lady said, "I'll be your sponsor." That was on a Tuesday after Memorial Day weekend, 1989, and that was the first time I had tried this AA thing. I finally got to a meeting Sunday morning at the hospital in Farmville. I picked up a white chip. And I don't remember what the topic of the meeting was, but I know that there was a sense in there that everything was going to be okay, that I was finally where I needed to be. And I liken it to my higher power today. I didn't know it then. There was just a sense in the room, more of a feeling. I started going to meetings. I knew I was kind of in trouble because when I told him that I was joining AA and I was going to stop drinking, he brought a 12-pack home. It's like, oh, I guess I'm on my own now. And the lady that said she'd sponsor me suggested that perhaps I needed to get a job and start putting some money away just in case. The domestic scene was such that things were kind of unacceptable. There was things going on that were unacceptable. And what I heard at meetings was, don't take other people's inventory, and acceptance is the answer. So the ping pong game starts in the head. Do I go? Do I stay? What do I do? Ba 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 da da. And trying not to take his inventory and accept things such as they were. And what I've learned today is I don't have to accept the unacceptable, and just because I accept something doesn't mean that I agree with it. That was two very important things for me. So that sponsorship didn't work out with that lady. We never went through the book. We never did the steps. Every time I called, she was too busy, it seemed, because she was running a business. I asked this other lady to sponsor me because she had shot her husband, and I identified with that because I wanted to shoot my husband. I don't remember her name. I call her Annie Oakley. So she didn't have a phone. Please, if you get a sponsor, make sure they have a phone. I would go to her house, and we would just fuss about the guys, and then finally she moved away. So I went without a sponsor, and there was this fellow that used to come to the meetings in Farmville when he was in town, and he talked about, the answer is in this book. And he was very enthusiastic about the book and very enthusiastic about Alcoholics Anonymous. So I got myself a book and I read it. And I read the final conference report and I read the 12 and 12 and I read a lot of stuff. Most of it was conference approved, not all of it. And I was doing AA my way. The meetings I was attending, there was a lot of open discussion meetings, and someone would come in and present a problem on the table, and then you'd go around, 30 people would give their opinion about what that problem, whoever ought to take care of their problem. And so there wasn't a real clear message. There was also a lot of, there was no singleness of purpose. So I was very confused because I didn't know for sure what I was. I mean, I knew I had alcoholism, but I could also, like, be all these other things because I did a lot of other things. And I was very confused, very confused. There was a lady that went away to treatment that was an alcoholic. She went away for codependency. She came back and started up a meeting for adult children. So I went to that. And she had the EA book, so I read that. And then somebody else had the MA book, and I read that. And I'm reading all this stuff, and I'm just really confused. Very confused. But I'm not drinking. And I was rather irritable, restless, and discontented. I was more homicidal and suicidal not drinking than when I was drinking. 1992, I ran away from home. I packed up a U-Haul and took my daughter and went back to New York and stayed with my dad during the week and my mom on the weekends to give dad and stepmom a break. And I went to meetings almost every day. I could walk to meetings. And this poor redhead asked me to sponsor her. And I handed her Melody Beattie's Codependent No More. I owe her amends. I don't know her name. I'm sorry. I don't know how that worked out. I asked three different women to sponsor me. They all told me no. He came to visit. He said, I don't understand why you can't have a glass of wine. I said, because I'm an alcoholic. He said, oh, okay, I get it. Come back, try it for a year. If it doesn't work out, you can leave with my blessing. So load up another U-Haul and come back to Virginia. Well, I didn't go to meetings. I had been gone probably 3 months. I went every day and came back to Virginia. And my pride and fear kept me from going back to Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I had undone, they threw me a going away party, and it was two AA ladies that helped me get the truck and load it up and all that stuff. Finally, around Christmas time, my daughter looks at me and says, Mom, don't you think you need to go to a meeting? Oh, so I went back. And Bucky had started the Cumberland meeting by then. And so that became my home group. And I started hit or miss going to meetings, and I was still pretty much sponsoring myself. And a few years go by, and I'm still just living how I'm living at home. With the things were not different at home. There was still unacceptable behavior going on. 1997. Well, earlier than that, I had done. I went to a meeting, a Wednesday night meeting, in Farmville, and I was just livid about something that was going on at home. And two ladies pulled me aside and said, "You need to do a fifth step." So I started working with Judy, and Judy was quite a character. I love Judy. And it was with her that I finally did a true fourth and fifth step. I had attempted to do, my first attempt at a fifth step was simply just a list of everything I hated about myself, and I read it to somebody, balled it up, and threw it out the window on the way to Richmond one night, which really wasn't very effective. I did this inventory with Judy. I told her to take it to the grave stuff, and I had an experience, and I was no longer trying to figure out who, what, or where God was. I just knew that God was in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I had, he was inside. It, he, she, it was there. What happened was I failed to continue, and 19, Judy turned me on to speaker tapes. My first speaker tape was Johnny Harris talking about the traditions and using the principle of the traditions in your life, and I had never really heard that before. That guy with the answer in the book wanted to do a tradition meeting, but I thought, oh, that's just crazy. So Judy turned me on to speaker tapes, and I went to a convention finally. In 1997, the state convention was in Hampton, and I had an experience there that kind of was like a 2x4 across the head, and I realized I just could not live how I was living anymore. I went home, I got honest with him, I said, "I just can't do this anymore. I can't do this anymore." And he told me I wasn't an alcoholic, and I said, "Well, I'll prove to you I am. Take me to the liquor store." And I bought a pint of Southern Comfort and a pint of gin, and before I was out of the parking lot, I had cracked open the top of that Southern Comfort, and glug, 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 and that worm goes down, and then it's like, oh, shit, what have I done? Sorry. I had flushed it down the toilet, and, you know, all this drama before going to the store. I packed up all the AA books and put them in a box and took the bumper sticker off the car. And also, yeah, it was kind of like, F God, F AA, I'm getting drunk. And I did. And my daughter came home. She was 16 at the time, and boy, was she mad at me. And she called Bucky, my friend Bucky. And did some drunken dial that night. I don't remember the conversations, but I know I talked to a few people. And Bucky made me promise I would come to our home group. It was a Thursday night, and he made me promise I would come to the home group either to pick up a white chip or turn in my key. Now, usually the little meeting in Cumberland was him and me and another couple of guys. That was it. I was the only girl. And that next night, that room was full of women. He had gotten on the phone and rallied the troops, so to speak. And I was overwhelmed with the love and acceptance and God, I guess, doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. So I started again. And that was September 1997. 2 months sober, Bucky dragged me to a district meeting. And I thought, my first experience with a district meeting was back when Farmville was in District 16 with Petersburg. And they used to have a picnic at Wilkes Lake. And a bunch of old men got together and they were arguing about how to spend money. And I thought, I am never getting involved in politics of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's for somebody else. Anyway, 2 months sober, Bucky drags me to this district meeting and the new District 36 Southside new district. And it was a few years old. They were holding elections and they elected me district secretary. I'm like, no, I can't do this. I'm only 2 months sober. They said, oh, yes, you can. It'll be good for you. And that began my journey into general service. And I went to an assembly. 3 months sober, and I was hooked. The bigger world of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I was going to meetings, but you go out there and see what's going on around the state, and you read some of the other stuff, and you hear about what's going on in the nation and in the world. I mean, this is a big deal. AA is, it's everywhere. To hear the stories of how they've started meetings in these Eastern European countries, and hear stories about how the Big Book has been translated into some weird foreign language, that really just sparked my interest. I was fascinated that AA was that big, that it can go anywhere and work for anybody. I have been very, very blessed to have been asked to serve in several capacities. At the state level, that was really, really cool. I learned about concepts. I learned about traditions. One important lesson about asking for help, I was responsible for the database of all the groups in the whole Virginia when I was mail list coordinator. And I really didn't have computer skills. In fact, once I said I would never own a computer, and then they said, well, can you send email? I was like, yeah. And I was asked to serve. But, you know, I was trying to work on the computer and do this mail list to send to the secretary so he can send the newsletter out. And I didn't know what I was doing, and I had to ask for help. So it's very humbling, but I gained friends all over the state. I gained life experience because I can use a computer now. Just amazing things have happened as a result of Alcoholics Anonymous and just being willing to do what's asked of me. You know, will you do this? Will you show up? So back when I got drunk in 97, I was working at this little mom-and-pop store, little country store. They had food, they had lottery, they had beer, they had whatever, just a little country place. And I went to my boss and I said, I need a raise. And she said, perhaps you need a second job. So I went, because I was going to be supporting myself. I went to the Virginia Employment Commission and there was a job fair for Buckingham Correctional Center. And I thought, I've seen some of these correctional officers come into the store, you know, tall and short and old and young and everything in between. And I took a leap of faith and took a couple of tests and went through the process and I became a correctional officer. And I was good at it. I followed the rules. Not to my benefit, but, you know, don't show me the rule book and then not follow the rules. I'm real anal about that. Character defect is this ridiculous work ethic that I'm going to, like, think that everybody ought to do it the way they're supposed to do it. But they made me a field training officer, which was just a mentor for new officers, and I had only been there 2 years. That was 40 pounds lighter and like several years ago. Oh, yeah, I should fit that story in there too somewhere. We were in training, and they had people from other facilities all together. We were going through training. And I remember they were talking about Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was trying to correct their information. When they briefly mentioned AA, I did take meeting schedules to the training people so that other officers, if they needed help, could go get help. But that was one of the things in my interview that I was real open about, and I put it on my state application that I was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, because I didn't have a great resume because I hadn't had a lot of jobs. He didn't want me to work outside the home. So I had used my service positions on my application. It worked because the major thought he was impressed that I was doing something about my problem. So I was very open about my membership in Alcoholics Anonymous at the prison. And I helped people. Imagine that. I got this nickname, a helpful Helen. And it's usually used kind of sarcastically, and it kind of hurts my feelings, but oh well. You know? I remember looking in the mirror thinking, what am I doing here on earth? And because I really just didn't have a clue. And I don't have to figure anything out anymore. It's just stay sober and help God's kids. And that's enough. And I am so grateful for that. I spoke at a meeting, not very sober. And there was a couple there. I didn't talk long because I hadn't been sober long. And then somebody else finished the hour. But Lynn and Billy were at that meeting. And it was years later that we hooked up again. And Lynn was in one of those training classes. Weird, weird, weird. Small. The world gets smaller all the time. No. Not as an inmate. No. Oh, dear. Anyway, I didn't feel safe. It seemed to me that that particular job just kind of bred anger, fear, and resentment. And I put a prayer out there. It's like, God, I need to know what you need for me to do. And I was approached by this fella, and he asked me to be the service manager at his wilderness school. And we're walking around the campus, and he's explaining what he needs. And everything I had done up to that point in my life fit that job. The background I had, it just fit. Everything fit. So I went to work at Discovery School for a while. And since that time, it's been bizarre because I haven't had to look for work ever since. Just when the time was right, the next thing came up. When I left there, I thought I was going to pursue my art career and retire, and met and married a guy in AA and moved in with him. I stayed at home for a little while and then was presented another job working as a church sexton, and got tired of that, and I was offered another job as a nanny, and that's been such a joy to be able to help raise a kid, and the relationship with those two people, the parents, which had been kind of maybe estranged at some point, has been repaired and renewed and just made brand new. We're family, closer than DNA family. My daughter, one of my biggest fears was that she was going to be a teenage mom. And she came to me one time, and I thought, oh, here it is. And, Mom, I've been smoking crack. And I didn't flip out. Like, oh, we'll just stop, go to some meetings, get a sponsor, do the steps, and you'll be okay. And I knew I couldn't help her, but I've always treated her as like kind of a newcomer sponsee. I've always told her the truth. I've been really open. She came to meetings with me. She picked up her first white chip when she was experimenting with alcohol when she was 13. And I knew that she had to go through whatever it was she was going to go through. I gave her enough rope to hang herself. And I was there to love and support her. She's on a spiritual path today, and she's okay. She's in great shape. Fast forward, I don't know how much time went by, maybe a year. She comes to me again, Mom, you're going to be a grandma. And instead of like, oh no, it's the end of the world, I was able to come up with all these positive things, and it didn't come from me. It came from God, because oh, well, if you're a single mom, you can go to school, and you know who the dad is, and I mean, I came up with all these positive things instead of what I would have thought of how I was going to react, and truly, that's God working in my life. Sponsees, oh, when I've probably given my number out I don't know how many times over the years, and nobody ever really stuck. And when I rotated out of area service, I thought, well, geez, God, now what's in store? And there was this lady, this young woman, who started calling me. And she started coming to my house. And we started going through the literature. And she stuck. And that was really cool, because it's been through the women that I've tried to help that I've been able to see more about myself. One lady in particular comes to mind, a different lady, and I had never really seen those suicidal ideations as a character defect. I just thought they were a bad coping skill. And it was through this woman that I actually saw that what a character defect that was, and recognized it in myself. And I thought that it had gone away for a time. And after Sage and I had been married for a year, he had a heart attack. And it was kind of like the rug getting pulled out from underneath for some reason. And darned if it didn't come back, that self-pity and then that, and this looked like a way out. And it's like, what? Where, why is this back? Oh, ring, ring. Another lady calls. I'm feeling blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, well, guess what? Blah, blah, blah. And God has taken these horrible things in my life time and time again and turned them into good because I'm able to help somebody else. Time and time again. You know, he took my worst fear, fear that my daughter was going to be a teenage mom, and turned it into the greatest joy of my life, my grandson. One of the greatest joys of my life. Golly, I probably left out all kinds of stuff. I get kind of scattered. If I could say something to the newcomers, get a sponsor, work the steps, and you'll be okay. But get a sponsor. This is a wee thing. I can't do this on my own. I tried doing it on my own. It didn't work. It's a wee thing. I can't do it on my own. That's another one of those huge character defects, my self-sufficiency, and I'm going to fix this, and I'm going to do it, and I'm going to bulldoze through, and if I ignore it, it'll go away. But the honesty and the true brotherly spirit that's here, truly, you get what you give. And I'm not here to get anything anymore. There's nothing. It's an inside job. And I think I'm done. Thanks.